From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. There was a big movie premiere over the weekend in Uganda. Uganda's president, the former president of Tanzania, and actor Forrest Whitaker were there, along with some paparazzi, all for the premiere of The Last King of Scotland. It was an unusual confluence of fact and fiction, Ugandans watching the movie based on a novel about a very real Ugandan leader. Idi Amin was a ruthless dictator, but as NPR's Gwen Tompkins reports, many Ugandans point out that he was also a patriot.
There were rose petals on the red carpet, sweetly perfumed guests, and a troupe of the most delightful hip-shaking dancers. But the real action at the Garden City movie house in Kampala last weekend was inside the theater, where media cameras and recording equipment were not allowed. As the screen faded to black, no one moved. They were waiting for a film review from a man who said he had not been to a theater in 47 years. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni descended the stairs, bright-eyed and smiling, and did his best Roger Ebert imitation. He complimented everyone involved in the making of the film The Last King of Scotland. Then the president gave the actor Forrest Whitaker perhaps the highest thumbs up when he said, quote, he was a real Amin.
He walks very much like him. I would say definitely that's Amin walking.
Henry Chemba says he recognized his old boss in Forrest Whitaker's performance. Chemba was health minister in the Amin government for 5 years and helped cover up any number of Amin's crimes.
I had considered going into exile many times. But as you know, going into exile is not a bed of roses. I was comfortable here. I had also thought that even if I go, it will make no difference to Amin, because it will go on killing whether I was here or not.
Chemba finally fled Uganda in 1977 and wrote a book called A State of Blood. In the book, Chemba says Amin killed as many of his political enemies as he could, real or imagined. The Langi, which was the ethnic tribe of his predecessor, Milton Obote. Those in the Ugandan army who were still loyal to Obote. The Acholi people of northern Uganda, and a wide array of Uganda's intellectual and economic elite. Chemba dedicates A State of Blood to 100 people who were disappeared, murdered, or died mysteriously during the Amin years, including his brother, and Amin's second wife, Kay, who was found dismembered in the trunk of a car.
I think it is the legacy of murder, legacy of chaos, legacy of absolute dictatorship, and complete disregard for human life. That is the only way I could explain the situation.
But not every Ugandan cared.
All people supported the army in this country. And even today, people kneel down and pray for Amin.
That's Haji Bunkadeko. He's a businessman in Kampala, a chief of the Baganda, Uganda's largest ethnic group, and leads the advisory board of Uganda's Chamber of Commerce. When Amin came to power in a military coup in 1971, he says black Ugandans owned virtually no businesses. Nearly all the nation's industry was in foreign hands, mostly those of Indians with British passports. In 1972, Amin gave the Asians 90 days to leave Uganda. He said he was fighting a war to expose the West for trying to exploit the economies of independent African nations. And the expulsion of more than 50,000 Indians from Uganda helped make Haji Bunkadeko rich.
I say, Amin, thank you.
But when Amin turned over the economy to Ugandans who had never done business before, he created chaos, shortages of basic necessities. The nation suffered during these years, and strangely enough, it also thrived.
He worked very hard to make everything in Uganda running. He made cooperatives, banks, Uganda Airlines. He's the one who started it. He's the one who built the conference center.
That's Gerard Namukule, an engineer in Kampala. Namukule also echoes what many Ugandans believe, that Idi Amin did not kill as many people as the international community suggests. The accepted number in the history books is about 300,000, but Namukule and many, many others say that there were far fewer killings, perhaps less than 20,000. Fred Guadeco is Amin's biographer. He says Amin asked him to hide some of his worst transgressions, but any serious biography of Amin must include the 1977 murder of the Anglican Archbishop Chinane Luom. The Archbishop and Amin were at odds over a number of issues. Then Amin reportedly became so furious with the Archbishop that he beat him up.
Then he said, "Are you going to help this country to solve its problems?" The Archbishop said, "I'm going to pray for this country." He closed his eyes and started praying. "God, I pray to you to help this country, to help our president, to help our leader, to put this country back on peace." I mean, he got out his pistol. The man put the thing in his mouth, and the man continued praying. He shot him in the mouth when he was praying. That is the worst thing a person can do. You can't shoot a bishop in the mouth at zero range when the bishop is praying, and in the prayer he's even praying for you.
But that does not sound like the father that Hajira Amin knew. She was born in 1971.
I don't believe the way he loved his country. He can just go and killing everyone just like that. If he really kills you, maybe you're a spy or you're a rogue. I think so.
Perhaps the most difficult reality for foreigners to accept about Idi Amin is that he could also be indisputably decent. Amin was among the first to speak out against apartheid in South Africa. As president, he reportedly didn't steal from the coffers like his contemporaries in neighboring countries. And he loved his children fiercely, all 62 that are known, and perhaps more.
People forget how important in this contemporary patriarchal society. When he says he's a father of this nation, it's a very big deal.
That's Forrest Whitaker, the latest actor to step into Amin's shoes. He says Amin was not only a founding father of modern Uganda, but he also wanted to be known as a father figure to all of Africa.
He was one of the few African leaders who have ever just told the Western world to get out of his country. Get out, we don't need you, go, and joke about them. And as a result, many Pan-Africans still look at him with a great degree of admiration.
Amin was toppled by Tanzanian forces in 1979. His successor was Milton Obote, the man he had deposed 8 years before. Idi Amin died in exile in Saudi Arabia in 2003. Gwen Tompkins, NPR News, Kampala.